Hi, I'm Cécile Gauert, editor of Bone International magazine, US edition. And today I catch up with Jeff Summers, who is a senior designer for Scout Boats in South Carolina. He's going to talk to us about building the American boat builder's flagship, the LSX 670, a $5 million, five outboard powered, 60 mile an hour, 20 some meter yacht, which they created with super yacht designers Harrison Eidsgaard. Summers, who studied car design in Michigan, interned with Hessen Yachts, where he got his understanding for superyacht design. From there, he looked for a place with a beach and palm trees and landed his job with Scout, an ambitious and innovative builder that has made a giant splash with his incredible day boat.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. We are looking at a nice storm outside the window here. I'd rather be boating, but it's not a very good boating day today.
Yeah, the weather is finally breaking here in South Carolina, and it's honestly a beautiful day out today here.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you very much for making time. I understand you are having a busy day. You were very much involved in the design of this beautiful new Scout flagship, for lack of a better word, the LSX 670.
Correct. Yep.
So tell me about this boat. Is it fair to say it's the biggest outboard powered yacht in the world?
I think it's definitely up there. As I think the Hydrosport 65 was the biggest. And either though these are completely different boats, it is technically the largest outboard powered boat right now.
Right. So I've seen some people use the word center console. I did it myself, but I put it in quotation mark. I find it hard to describe it as a center console. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely pushing the limits. But I mean, technically, we are right there as far as like a walk around center console with this model.
Was it the idea?
I don't think the idea was ever to go out and build the largest, you know, outboard powered center console boat. But things, you know, as the project went on, progressed. And the boat kept getting a little bit bigger. And then we ended up with 67 feet overall.
Wow. Where did it start?
So, you know, reflecting on the project, you know, we go back and look at the design files. And some of the first drawings, it started out at 60 feet. So we gained 7 feet. Believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, on the boat this size, that's pretty significant.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, that's just from wanting to add more and more features, maybe a little bit more room here, there. And next thing you know, there's 7 feet. Of course, that was over probably a period of 3 or 4 months in the early development stages.
Where did the idea come from at the beginning?
You know, we started the project, I believe, 3.5 years ago. And the idea started with, you know, the success of our 530. And, you know, keeping in mind of that customer is going to eventually outgrow that boat, we thought, you know, why don't we go a little bit bigger with building on that? And some of the stuff that we wanted to do as far as have a little bit more interior space just went right along with it. So, you know, it was not too long after, a few years after the launch of the 530, we started kicking the idea around, and Steve Potts, the owner, just decided to green light it. And it's like, let's build a bigger boat.
Wow. And it's so exciting. You did.
Yes, yeah, we sure. Did. We did. We finally made it through, and we did.
Well, you know, our audience is maybe not so familiar with Scout. Maybe yes, because obviously Scout has built a number of lovely boats that could be used as tenders or chase boats for bigger yachts, or as another one of the fleet to keep somewhere in a marina or in a port and take over to the Bahamas, to Florida, and so on. But can you tell me a little bit more about Scout and where they came from, a little bit about the history?
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit of history about the company is that Scout was founded in 1989 by Steve Potts. And I believe the first Scout was 14 feet. So we've come a long way, come a long way in 30 some years.
How many of those can you put in the 6-7?
Oh, a handful for sure. A couple, one on the, maybe one on the roof and one on the transom, a couple on the front deck. But he started at a creek boat, a 14 foot outboard power boat. And then the boats just got progressively bigger. And, you know, we're based in Somerville, South Carolina, which is just outside Charleston. So it's a lot of intercoastal boating, ocean boating, creek boating. And, you know, as the years went on, the boats got bigger. When I actually joined the company back in 2016, the biggest boat we made then was a 42-foot boat. So we've seen a significant jump just from my time here alone.
Wow. So actually, you've been there, well, not quite a decade, but 9 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
More than I thought.
Yeah, it'll be 9 years this year.
Yeah. And did you start in the design department with Scout or?
Yeah. So I was fresh out of design school with not really any experience, but I knew I had a passion for boats and yachting in itself. And when I started back in 2016, the project that I initially jumped on was of the 530. So it was the biggest model at the time then.
Ah, okay.
So it's been quite a bit of fun reflecting on, you know, starting 9 years ago with the biggest model and currently at this point, you know, just coming out with the 670.
Yeah, that's amazing. So did you study specifically boat design or what kind of design?
Not entirely. So I grew up in Michigan, Southeast Michigan, and I went to a design school called Lawrence Tech. And being in Michigan, it's basically cars. The hub of automotive and cars. So yeah, all of my fellow students went to car design. Our teachers were currently active car designers at Ford, Chrysler, GM. So I have more of a little bit of automotive design, transportation design background than I did boats. But I mean, boats and yachts were my passion. So I tried to channel that during my time there.
I guess it worked out all right.
Yeah. Looking back, connecting the dots, I think I did okay.
I understand that you did an internship or stint at Hissen Yachts in Holland. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about that.
That was a great experience, honestly. It all really started from an Instagram post. There's a company still around called Sea Level, Yacht Design and Engineering at the time. And they put on a yacht design, a talent kind of competition. So it was, you know, design basically top deck of a 50-meter Hissen. And there was a handful of entries from around the world. And I ended up being in the top three.
Wow.
And got to go to Monaco, ended up winning the competition. And then on top of winning the competition, I got to have a 3-month internship with them in Amsterdam, Holland, and spend some time at Hissen, which was a really great experience.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What did you do while you were there?
So while we were there, we just refined the concept. So it started with the sun deck of a 50 meter, and then it was going towards the whole exterior design. So coming up with all the lines, building off of that initial concept, which was profile and top view of that layout. So we had multiple rounds of designing and then built the 3D model, visited Hissen a few times and toured a couple boats they had built. I think at the time they had Galactica Supernova, got to go on that, which was really cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it was their biggest at the time, so it was exciting.
That's great. So maybe this helped you when Scout was looking to bring in an outside designer from the yacht world, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I it's funny enough how I got this job. So I just shot a cold email out to a few different companies that I thought designed and created really beautiful boats. And I shot them an email, and I believe that internship got me the job here. They were impressed with that. We had a good talk. And between the time I sent the email to get the job to when I first started, it was about 2 weeks. So it moved very quickly.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I packed up my stuff from Michigan and moved down to South Carolina.
Wow.
Been here ever since.
Did you know anything about the area?
Oh, no.
No?
No. I just had two things on my checklist when I moved was to get out of the winters and a place that had beaches and palm trees. So,
all right. Well, you did pretty well, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, something that's very unusual about this new Scout, obviously, is the name of the outside designer that worked with Scout on it, which is Harrison Eidsgaard. Now, the people who follow Boat International probably are very familiar with the name because they are very much into big yacht design. But
yeah.
I guess people who build center console or operate outboard motor boats, maybe not that familiar with them yet. Anyway, how did the connection come about? Did you have something to do with it?
Yeah. So a lot of the early stages, we knew a project like this for us, we were out of our element. And, you know, we recognized that very early on. We knew that it all started with the interior. We figured we had a good hold with the exterior design because we know our customer. We knew what we wanted. At least we thought we did going off of all the feedback that we learned on the 530. And then it was really onto the interior that we knew we wanted it to be different. We knew we wanted it to have a super yacht feel. At least that's what we thought in our mind. So, you know, once we got to a certain point, at least we had a rough footprint or a package of the boat, that's when we started reaching out to some designers. And I've always had, I've always appreciated Harrison Isgard work. So they were on the list and I thought it would be a cool collaboration. And we actually reached out to several different superyacht designers and set up a meeting with two of them. And then through those two meetings, everyone in the group here felt like that was, you know, the best. We got along. They actually did some sketches on the second meeting that we were really impressed with, and we thought it felt right. So that's how we chose them. Basically wanting that super yacht feel on a boat this size, which is not necessarily usual.
No, probably not. I think the boat is, I got a little bit of a ride on it.
Yeah.
Didn't put my hands on the wheel. There was a buyer there, so, you know. We enjoyed having him try the boat out, and so, but walked all the way around. It's an amazing ride. But I think my favorite part was being on the dock and just watching it approach. It is such a beautiful boat. It really is.
Yeah, gorgeous. It was quite the feeling of seeing that thing finally touch the water after so long. Some people ask me how did it feel? And one thing a lot of people don't realize is we've looked at the boat probably for a couple of years now, every day, working on it for the past few years. So we kind of had to pinch ourselves to realize, like, wow, this is such a moment when we launched that boat. And it was awesome to finally see it in the water.
I can't imagine. Did you get to sea trial it?
Yeah. So it spent some time here in Charleston as we were, you know, finishing the rigging and some of the bottom paint and fine tuning the engines. And the day that we launched it, I got a chance to go out on there and finally, you know, take it all in, which was really cool.
Yeah. How fast did you go?
Honestly, that day, we only got it up to 40, but we were down two engines. So I didn't get the full speed, but I know on the sea trials, they were pushing just under 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, on the road that we were on, the gentleman pushed it over 50 knots, and it was amazing. It was, you know, really comfortable. And,
yeah, we're all super impressed with the performance so far.
Yeah. Beautiful and fast. Good combination.
Yeah, that's what we try to aim for, Scott, is we have three key design features on our boats is that, you know, it's sleek, it looks fast standing still, it's light, and the innovative features and stuff we do on board.
Yeah. Well, walk us a little bit through that. What are the selling point in that boat? I have my own thoughts about it, but you're the designer. So you tell
me.
Yeah,
for sure. Absolutely. So like I've been saying, it was building off of the 530. So a lot of the initial thoughts were, obviously it's a little bit bigger. So we wanted to pay a little bit more attention to the interior to be able to stay on the boat for a good bit of time and then protection from the elements. So those were the core factors was, you know, nice interior settings and protection. And then everything else grew from there. So we have the beach terraces on the aft deck, similar to the 530, except we just enlarged everything and took it all the way to the transom. And then the integration of the windshield to make this boat look very automotive and fast while not moving was a big part. And trying to get one thing with design is, you know, fast boats usually look low and long.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the easiest thing to do because you want to be comfortable when you're underway with the boat. So, you know, we went back and forth so many times trying to lower that hard top lower and lower because it just kept looking better and better. But you have to stop at one point, you know, because we got to fit. You have ergonomics that you have to respect. So that was a big one. And having a lot of, you know, things that you push a button and transform. So, you know, I believe it was November of 22, we all flew to Amsterdam for Metz Trade. And we met Peter and Jesse there, designers and Harrison Isgard, and we walked the show to get some ideas and look at some innovative products that, you know, the super yachts are using. And we got a bunch of good ideas and contacts from that, specifically with some of our window assemblies that transform by a push of a button.
Yeah.
But one of the best things about working at Scout is, you know, if you can figure out how to build it and design it, you will usually do something like that. We'll figure a way out to do it and come up with once we come up with the idea. So that's always fun as a designer to sketch crazy concept on paper. And it's like, let's build that. And I think a lot of that was, you know, with the passion and drive that Steve Potts and his son Stevie have here at Scout that gave us that ability to do that. And I think that's how we ended up with the 67-foot boat, because we just wanted to go bigger and bigger.
Big ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
How many people work at Scout these days?
I think the total headcount here, we have kind of a campus. We have a bunch of buildings set up, different manufacturing plants, and then we have our big R&D facility. But I think right now it's just under 500 people.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's a lot of people. Yeah. I didn't realize it was...
We design and build the boats here. So we're building boats from 17 feet to now 67 feet. So we have a good spread, big range there.
Right. When the 67 wasn't built, was it taking a lot of the attention?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was taking a lot of attention from us up here in engineering design and just, you know, floor space. We built a brand new R&D facility maybe 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. And immediately we're jumping into the 67. And once we started building that first boat, we started an R&D. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, I think it's just over 20,000 square feet. It filled up the floor very quickly. And that was all of R&D.
How many pieces of molds do you have for this boat? Any idea?
Oh, that's a tough question. I do not have a final count. Yeah, there is a lot of A and B side molds. And if you know anything about boat building, there's a lot of pieces that come together for that boat. And, you know, we're proud to say that we design and engineer most of that tooling here on our CNC router. So it was a big accomplishment for us and the team here.
Yeah. I understand it's lightweight, fairly lightweight for the size.
Yeah.
Well, what's the recipe in there?
So we're a composite boat builder. So everything is just glass and resin. And the 67 contains a lot of composite, a lot of carbon fiber. To try to take as much weight as possible out of this boat. The first boat we built, as it being the prototype, is a little bit heavier than we anticipated, but it's outperforming what we anticipated. So we're excited for Hull 2 and onward, because the boat will get a little bit lighter, which ultimately is going to increase the speed already. But it's a lot of carbon, a lot of carbon fiber, a lot of fiberglass. It's a combination of glass, a high density core, and then resin. And then we infuse all that just to create the lightest products possible.
I think those big engines have changed the world of boating forever. I don't think you could have built a boat like this with this kind of speed before the advent of those big Mercuries.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. Yeah. Those were game changers for us. And even before the 67 was a thought, it changed the shape of the 530. So we built a lot of, you know, five engine boats on the 530. But once those 600s came out, we tuned it down to a four engine, and they were just performing.
Right.
So that's why you see, I mean, a lot of boats that weren't very practical 10 or so years ago, you would never thought they'd have outboard motors today because of that.
Yeah. In addition to being fast, it's got quite a bit of range, actually, I understand. The captain surprised me because I'm used to the big boats, right? So the minute the speed curve goes up, your consumption just changes drastically. But he said that the curve didn't change that much between 35 to 45 knots, which really surprised me. What kind of range do you expect the boat ultimately to have?
I believe our range was always, the base target was 400 nautical miles. Nothing less than that. And if we exceeded that's great. I mean, this boat was, it's one thing to talk about the exterior design and how beautiful it is, but one thing that's always not really appreciated as much is all the systems incorporated in that, because those systems have a footprint. They got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So we were trying to put as much fuel in that boat as possible. And we ended up with 1500 gallons on a single tank with a bunch of other systems. But one thing that you mentioned, like even as the speed goes up, if the hull becomes more efficient, and that's due to, you know, how light the boat is, how fast and how much torque those engines are pushing, but also the hull design. It's a stepped hull, so it's trying to reduce as much drag as possible. With those big vents you see in the side of the hull, it's allowing air to flow under that hull to reduce drag.
Hmm. It's a bit like a foiling system. Not quite, but yeah, some air between the hull similar, and the water. Yeah.
Similar, yeah, yeah.
Does Scout do the naval architecture in-house, or you also had an outside company working on it?
So I know they, Scouts, before I was here, they really dove into some of the pioneering of their hull specifically with the twin steps. And they worked with, I believe it was Reggie Fountain. Reggie Fountain was a big powerboat guy. So Fountain yeah. Powerboats.
Yeah, of course.
And they helped refine, he helped refine them on the 42 hull.
Oh, I didn't
and
know that.
We've learned a lot from that boat. And, you know, we've always, there's a couple of rule of thumbs as far as the hull design goes. So we'd scale it up, but make sure our proportions are correct. And we've worked with a few companies outside of Scout on their expertise, doing some CFD runs. Just as we fine tune some stuff. And there's a local yacht designer here as well that we've collaborated with to do a lot of computer simulations. And it, especially for us, a big boat like this, it's the capabilities of being able to see the boat moving in water beforehand, before it's even built on the computer, helped us tremendously. And just designing that hull to be as efficient as possible, efficient and fast.
Yeah. Try to minimize the element of surprise once the boat is in the water, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
What are the aspects of this build that were the most challenging, in your opinion?
Ah, that's a good one.
Or was it, oh, it was all easy, a piece of cake?
You know, I wish I could say right now it was easy and piece of cake, but, you know, we went into some of the stuff, not necessarily knowing what to do, but, you know, learning from, you know, the design aspect of the previous models. I think what makes this boat unique, at least as far as building it, is, you know, at the end of the day, it's a production boat. So it has to have a lot of repeatability for, sure. you know, our team here to build it efficiently. That being said, it's still semi-custom because when, you know, the customer's spending this much amount of money, they want to have certain things and we're open to that. But I think that once we nailed down the design, it was a really big challenge figuring out exactly how we build it and tool it. You know, with the molds, you need drafts so these parts can come out. And then you have these pieces that need to fit just right for everything to, you know, come together in the end. And for instance, that house, so where the glass mounts onto the console, that's 2, 4, 6, 8. It's about 15 parts coming together. And those wow. parts have to come together perfectly in order to fit. So we checked and double checked and triple checked repeatedly to make sure everything fit because we had a lot riding on that tooling.
And it fit.
Oh, it fit. It fit. There was, we were all, so for example of that, the glass, we had to send the glass off to the manufacturer to get made because it was quite long lead times. So you have to nail it on the computer. And, you know, when the glass came and it was time to fit the glass on our structure, we were all waiting in anticipation for that to go perfectly. And I can say that it did, which was a great achievement. It felt really good here. No mishaps.
Who made the glass? Do you remember?
Yeah, the glass was, it's a laminated glass and it was made from a company called ProCurve.
Mm.
I think they're based in Pennsylvania, but I could be wrong on that. But
okay.
It was our first collaboration with them. And I mean, it's the biggest glass we've ever done here at yeah. Scout. So we just went from some recommendations from some industry folk and it turned out good. Turned out great.
It looks beautiful. And it gives a nice feeling of protection and incredible views as you drive or ride the boat. So it's really fun.
Yeah, I'm glad you got to experience it.
Oh yeah. That, yeah. Me too. I think, you know, these kind of boats, they look great and you can tell all kinds of stories, but you know, it's when they're in the water and you can interact with them that you really get the sense of what they can do. You know, what impressed me a lot about this boat is when you look at it, especially the sports model, which this is, right? I think you are planning on maybe a flag bridge model and maybe something else. Was it this third one, perhaps? I forget.
So yeah, right now, yeah. The third one will be a tower boat. The second one's going to be the same Alex's model as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the LSX is very sleek. So it has this very, as you were mentioning, kind of low roof coach appearance. And then you step on and then the impression is quite amazing because it's actually very deep. I mean, when you're standing on the console and looking down into the cabin, it's quite a plunge. It's amazing how deep it really is. It's kind of an interesting trick to have this ceiling heights on the lower deck and then actually a boat that's so sleek on the water. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you can see the boat from the shore if you're looking at the distance, and it's got that low sleek profile. But then what we did, and we spent a lot of time through the process, you know, early on in design, is if you stand in the cockpit of the boat, which is in the aftmost area, you're essentially, besides the cabin, on the lowest exterior deck. So you're looking up as you go forward into the boat, which is nice. And when you're at the helm, you're at one of the highest points. So you're looking down, looking aft. So we have a bunch of different levels, and we wanted to almost make that segmented like that. So, you know, you're doing not necessarily different activity, but it's almost a different zone where, you know, you're in the cockpit, you're either swimming or you're fishing. You go up a step and you're out of the cockpit, but you're in this breezeway where the leaning post is. And then you step inside on the same level. And then you step up to where the helm is to pretty much separate the helm space from the lower galley space. And then from there, you can make your way right into the cabin with four or five steps down.
Right. I was impressed. There's quite a bit of room inside. I really didn't expect it, though. Quite amazing.
Well, that's good to hear.
What kind of tweaks are you looking to do on the next tile? I understand that the Sea Keeper may be a different size.
Yeah. So right now, the boat is outfitted with an 18, which is probably a little much for that boat, believe it or not. So we're going to... Sea Keeper at the time was developing a Sea Keeper 14, and it just wasn't available yet. So that's why we designed it and outfitted it with it. But I mean, we'll probably make the boat standard with a 14 moving forward, I believe. And that takes about 800 pounds out of the design, which is pretty significant.
Wow. Yeah, that is. It probably will have some impact on the ride.
Oh, absolutely. That's why we see the boats moving forward, number 2, 3. They're going to become faster because we made some tweaks in some of our laminate schedule. So how the parts are laid up and infused, which is going to pull some weight out, make some of the material stronger and lighter. And then along with a couple system tweaks, we were able to reduce a significant amount of weight.
Is speed is still something that people are looking for in this particular segment? High speed, I mean. Speed, high speed. Yeah, it's still something people want, I guess.
You know, that's a unique question because one of the goals of this boat too was also design something that didn't exist in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So I think us creating this project that almost fuses the luxury aspect of it, the sleekness of it, and the speed, you know, there's not really a product out there that exists like this. So people might not realize that they wanted speed or a boat that, you know, looks that good. So it's a factor for us because it's, you know, basically, one of our core values is designing fast, light boats that look really good.
Sure.
So we might be, you know, changing some people's minds. And at least from the feedback that we've gotten so far from the debut in Palm Beach is that people are very excited about the product.
Has it attracted people outside of your usual customer base?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been good reception. And, you know, we have customers that currently have 530 that are very interested in the boat, and then people that haven't even heard of our brand before interested in the boat. So it's opened up a lot of new doors for us.
Hmm. Do you see it mostly as a day boat with the ability to stay overnight if you go somewhere or weekender, or what other uses do you see for this type of boat?
So one of the many things that make this boat unique is it is outboard power of the size. So the draft of the boat is relatively low.
Yeah.
Which means you can go into shallow water. I mean, it's unthinkable. The beach is 67-foot boat, but you can pull up on a sandbar with this boat, which makes it unique and for shallow water cruising like the Bahamas. But also it's attracting the people with bigger boats. People, you know, that Boat International is more used to super yachts. So chase boats or tenders. We have quite a few, you know, 42 and 53 tenders that are out there. So there's that whole clientele. And then it's for people that want to fish. You can fish the boat. It's one of our core values at Scout is we make an outboard power boat. That's a sport fishing boat. But it's also for people that would want to cruise the intercoastal.
Right.
So it's got a wide range, a big net to cast for a lot of this because they can achieve so many things.
I mean, sure, you would look great on the intercoastal, but what a shame, really.
Yeah, you can go on the intercoastal for a little bit, but take it offshore and put the throttles down.
I mean, really, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to Bimini or something, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Great, so from what you're saying, it sounds like you already have others of these boats under construction.
Yeah, right now, hull number two is well under its way, and then hull number three is starting to be laid up as well.
Wow. And how long of a construction do you expect for the next hulls, now that you already have the molds done?
It's hard to give you a specific answer on that, because we learned a lot putting number one together, which is we've looked at that, see how we can improve. And as number two is going together now, all the time has been cut in half, just because, one, we have the experience of what we raved on hull number one.
Sure.
And so that's just, we're not going back and forth. There's still a lot of support from engineering on number two, just because we made a few changes. But, right. You know, since everyone's had to go around once, they know what to expect. And we have so many documents just showing how to put this boat together. For instance, we had our interior outfitter here a couple weeks ago. And from his time with number one versus number two, it was cut in half. So we're starting to streamline that process and putting these boats together a lot quicker.
Yeah, I would imagine with experience and moving forward is a little bit quicker.
Yeah, and we want to see more of these boats out in the water.
Yeah, a whole fleet of them, maybe.
Absolutely.
Is the flybridge ready to be built, or are you still in the design phase of a?
So yeah, we're just about buttoning up the design phase of the flybridge. We spent a good bit of time, you know, figuring out exactly aesthetically what we wanted. Functionally, how we wanted to treat that space. And, you know, I mean, speaking real time, we just had a final meeting on it today, or I'll say one of the last meetings on it today, because we're about to cut some parts. So I'm not sure if you're super familiar with how fiberglass boats are built, but
some.
So we have the A side of the hard top of the 67 plug down below on our shop floor. And what we're doing with designing the flybridge is we're keeping that. We actually cut out the center of it because it's technically the same A side. We're just tweaking the landing of how this upper station structure is going to sit on there. So we've leveled out that floor, and we're getting ready to cut some of these parts on our mill. And what we'll do is we'll cut the final shapes out of a high density foam. We'll test fit those. We'll basically mock it up on that A side. And then walk through it and then say yes or make some changes here and there. And then we'll start to build some tooling off of it. So it's a little bit of a project of sketch it up, work it out in some 3D modeling, have a tons of review on there, change some things here and there, send it to the mill, cut something on the mill, and either say yes or make some tweaks, and then off to tooling.
Yeah.
It's kind of the process here.
I guess the really tricky part is to keep it as elegant while adding something on top. That's always a trick.
It is such a dance, because we've spent a lot of time going back and forth on how can we make this a little bit different than what's in the market now. But this is what we want to do while you're up there, and, you know, catering all those ideas and making sure that you have some function while you're on top of that hard top, and without making it look big and heavy, you know, keeping the whole essence and flow and the beautiful design that, you know, us and Harrison Eidsgaard put together.
Yeah. Are you planning to have a couple of helm consoles on there then, an interior and outside up on the flybridge?
Yeah, or just, up on the fly.
Yeah.
There's, as soon as you walk up through the hatch, you're basically walking on a big U-shaped lounge with seating on either side. And then you'll have a separate console in the middle with some helm seats behind it, because there's quite a bit of space up there. It'll be all enclosed, so you'll have protection and what as well with a material that we call isinglass. It's like an acrylic structure.
Right.
And we have some renderings that are floating out there that have changed a little bit, but for the most part, that's what the final design ended up looking like.
Very good. So are you keeping hull number one for demonstrations, or will you be selling it?
Yeah, that's, everything's for sale. And I don't know if I could confirm or deny about number one, but we've been keeping it and sea trialing it very hard with prospective customers, and it's been busy. I believe it's in South Florida right now, still making its rounds. boat's been booked up ever since the end of Palm Beach show.
You're selling it through Marine Max as well, right? They're repping Scout.
Yeah, yeah. We partner with them and they're a big dealer network for us.
Very good. Well, listen, that's about all the questions I had for you, Jeff, unless there's something you were dying to tell me that I didn't ask, which, you know, it would happen.
Yeah,
could happen. Yeah.
No, I think that was pretty good. I think you nailed everything.
Okay, sounds great.
Thank you for listening to Boat Briefing, a production of Boat International Media, edited, mixed, and produced by Naomi Wilson and Phoebe Long. Tune in next time for more news from the superyacht world and fascinating interviews. Talk to you soon.